So, I thought I'd start by describing, well, the Sundance routine. We all know what that's like. And I found myself at the Holiday Village Cinema. No, not at the Holiday Village. At the Yarrow.
The Yarrow, yeah.
And you know how it is you're running through the day, and this really caught on. This is the most intriguing and most agreeable, most likable sensibility for a you know, woman looking for a love story, which automatically is anathema to my taste as a movie girl, because they tend to be, in my judgment, overly perky. They tend to be broader, emotionally broad as well, you know, and that kind of fluffy, bouncy energy, you know.
Glossy and, yeah.
So, I wish that there that romantic comedies, if you want to call, would that be fair to use that term? It's almost
yeah,
not.
It's romantic, I don't. You know? I always say it's a portrait of loneliness, kind of. But you know, it ended up being funnier than I thought it was actually going to be, or people took it as, you know, got a lot of crazy laughs, and I thought. But I think it was more of like an honesty that people responded to, as instead of like kind of slapstick humor.
Yeah. Well, I responded to that.
Oh, good. Thank you.
I just wish more. Films in this vein, if you will, were more of your sensibility, which is why I think it's really a standout.
Thank you. Yeah, people were very trepidatious at first, like, oh, here's your story.
Or just
in general, you know, like, oh no, you're going to make a romantic comedy. This has been done a million times. But I always knew in my mind what I wanted to do with it. And and it was about someone being very sad and very lonely, and it wasn't about, like, everything's fine, and then something happens, and then I recover, and then it's all okay at the end. And, you know, that doesn't interest me at all. I like human stories, and I like pain.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
The painful romantic comedy.
Yeah, well, that's the thing that, you know, grounds it. I thought that was the best Parker Posey performance I've ever seen. I really.
Yeah, she was pretty phenomenal. Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, I've been always been such a huge fan of hers. I've seen everything she's done. And stop talking about her. Here she comes.
Hey, how are you?
Best friends forever. Hey. Too smoky.
Good to see you. I'm about
covered in makeup.
You're smelling like tobacco.
You're
okay. You know.
You're taking over again.
I can't even tell you bye.
Bye. Good luck.
Thank you.
Say something funny. Talk about Gracie.
Okay. Can I wear your earrings?
Of course.
Now that we're in the
context.
We've been
trading clothes.
I'm wearing Parker's shirt. And where's the blue shirt?
It's in there.
Okay.
Do you want it?
That's really nice.
Can
you tell me who made that?
Mark Jacobs? Or this?
No, the blouse.
Mark Jacobs.
Nice.
You look great. Good luck, earrings.
All right. See you back in the hotel.
All right.
I wanted to tell you, now that we're in the context of this film rather than Pals, which I liked, but I thought this was your best performance.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Thank you. I love this kind of writing and this kind of work so much. It's very rare you read things. These movies aren't made any produced anymore. It's very rare.
Yeah,
it's a simple love story, you know? It's like,
I know,
it's like someone's secret life. They're lonely. What people are like when they're alone in their room. You know, I love that. And then everyone has to go out in the world and put on a, you know, they have to deal, they have to live and work, and underneath the door's shut, and boy, it's hard, see how hard it is. It's only one of the things, didn't touch on that today, but I like that.
Which is amazing, considering how much we talked today.
Poor Paul got the crappiest interview.
Oh, I know, you said you fell asleep.
Oh, yeah.
He was so sweet, too. All right, have fun, knock him dead, as Jenna would say.
Knock him dead.
Knock him dead, honey.
So why didn't you make, did you need 30-something years to get to the point where you felt, you know, you could do it well? I mean, I'm kind of wondering why you weren't making movies a little earlier. I know you were doing a lot
No one would finance me. Really. I mean, it took 3 years to find the financing for this movie. And, you know, I could show you the 5-page list of the 300 people that said no to me, you know?
It was, 'cause they didn't like the idea of a romantic comedy?
I mean, I had all the cast. I had everything. It seemed like, you know, I didn't want a lot of money. I didn't want anything. It was just like, I thought, oh, my God, am I cursed? Am I just not going to get to make this movie? But it just wasn't an option for me. So, you know, I think the struggle made me kind of appreciate everything more. And I guess everybody has their right time and moment. Mm. And you know, 3 years ago, I probably would have made a different movie than now. So
how different?
I don't know. Well, I mean, it's funny to write something and be so close to it and be in that moment of like, and then grow from that and turn into a different person and have different experiences. Thanks, sweetie. And so it was nice to have a little retrospect on it, you know, and be able to look back and not be so completely involved in that moment for myself and be able to give it to someone else and let someone else kind of pass the baton to someone else. So, you know, Hollywood will make you feel like if you're not doing something by the time you're 22, you're a loser, you know? And it's such a, you know, it's not about that. You look at all the, you know, the great Italian directors and, you know, Pasolini and Fellini and all those guys, and they started making movies in their 40s because of the war, and you know, you have to have something to say. And so, you know, I'm very interested in making more films, and I always think of it as like a benchmark of your life, where you're at, you know. And so writing really comes from the heart. It's a hard job. It's a terrible, lonely job, but it facilitates the art, you know. Like, always the first time writing something is fun. Like the first draft, and then you're like, hold on while I stab myself in the eye 40 times trying to get this done. Yeah, so, yeah.
Did you go through a workshop process to refine? No.
No.
You showed friends. Did you do readings to refine it a little bit?
I did a couple of readings over the years when I was looking, and it seemed like the thing I was the most concerned about was if the dialogue sounded natural. Mm-hmm. And when it was sounding natural and it was flowing and it had a certain flow, then I knew that I was going to be okay. But, you know, you lose yourself. I mean, you know, everyone asked me, like, did you doubt the art when you couldn't get finance in all those years? Did you doubt the process? And I didn't. I doubted myself. And, you know, there was, you know, many days in the week where I was on the bed, like, crying and immobilized, like, I'm the biggest loser. But it wasn't about the work. It was more about, like, because I guess the work is you, and it's so personal with you that, you know, and being, you know, John Cassavetes' daughter didn't help me in the slightest. In fact, it was probably, looking back, a kind of hindrance. And, oh, yeah, like, another Cassavetes thinks that she can make a movie and blah, 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 blah. Or what, I don't know. I don't know what it is, but, you know, you think about it and you think, I don't know what people don't know who I am. They don't know. I mean, people who know me, but people who think they know you in this kind of society of, like, you know, I call it like all those magazines, like the fast food, like, it's, you know, it could be lies, it could be truth. And if you look at, you know, God forbid you ever Google yourself, it's like the worst thing in the whole world. Like, what are those people writing about me? They don't even know me. She's a celebutante or whatever. And you're like, I work. I'm like, I don't go out every night and, like, you know, stand in front of a paparazzi camera and, like, get paid to go to parties, or I don't do those things.
Yeah.
You know, I went out in my 20s and had fun, and it was great and fun, but, like, I'm interested in the work.
Mm-hmm. Are you a Francophile yourself?
I am.
You live there?
I have a French fiancé. I'm going to. I have been... it's funny, I wrote my script and then I met my French boyfriend, and I was like, what are you doing here? But so we're getting married in September, and I'm going to spend, like, the better part of my life there, I think, and it's a nice place to raise your kids. And
are you guys planning to live in, or do you have a place?
In the second, yeah. And it's great. It's just, you know, I think the flow of life there is very appealing to me. It's like everybody works really hard, but they also spend time enjoying their life. And you know, when I first started spending a lot of time in France, Sundays would drive me crazy. because I would never wake up before the markets closed or whatever. And I'm like, you can't do anything. And he's like, that's the point.
Yeah.
This is the day that you're not supposed to do anything. And now I'm just like, it's Sunday. Let's go to Joe Allen and have a burger and then, like, do nothing. Watch a movie and just sit on the grass and fall asleep or, you know. So I really like that style. And, you know, I love French films, and I think that they, you know, they're very smart about the kind of movies that I like is just, like, emotional movies and movies about where they don't, you know, 5 minutes in a movie can go by, nobody says anything, and you're just completely riveted because they're doing something that's amazing, you know. And
did you go into it with Parker talking about how you wanted to? Because I distinctly really felt that there was a vulnerability you got from her. There was a maybe because you're of a similar sensibility, but I just feel that there was less of a. She's got a persona. She's got a very recognizable and enjoyable persona that it's, you know, it's about being, you know, kind of a. She's got kind of a attitude thing going, you know, which is the. But I just felt it was more. There's more of a vulnerability on
it. Oh, yeah. It was really important for the role to have that vulnerability. But when I met Parker 3 years ago or whatever, when I first met her, and we sat down and we had tea and we talked for 3 hours and we didn't ever say one thing about the movie. And then when we were done, I was like, oh, but do you think you want to be in the movie? She was like, oh, yeah. Yeah, totally. So, I don't know. She's a human being, you know. She's not, like, a doll, and she's not a robot, and she understands things on a very deep level that in just having a lot of conversations with her, we just got on the same page very quickly, and we didn't have any rehearsal time or anything for the movie, which was just nuts. So, and she was out here working on a TV show. I flew out here for 24 hours. We sat on the lawn at the Chateau Marmont and, like, from 3 in the afternoon till 11 at night, and just talked and talked and talked and talked, and it wasn't like, we talked about the movie and what I wanted and what she wanted out of it, but it was more like just having a connection and a trust. And I think that's so important when you're making, especially when you're making a movie like this about emotions and about vulnerability, that she knew that I wasn't going to fuck her, you know, when it came down to it. Like, I was going to be there for her. She was going to show up for me. I was going to show up for her. And then she could do what she needed to do because she didn't have to protect herself from me, you know. So, and everyone was like that. Dre was like that, and Justin was like that, and Melville was certainly like that. So, it was, you know, it was rush. We had 20 days to shoot. It was totally nuts. But we had...
That's fast, man.
Yeah, no, it was totally crazy. But we all trusted each other so much and enjoyed each other that, you know, you have... It's like a family when you make a movie.
How was
better
it shot?
Worse.
Was it on digital?
Yeah.
Okay.
HD. Yeah, with this camera called the Viper, which is a pretty new camera, but it looks, you know.
Who else has used that?
It was,
Did Michael Mann use it on Collateral?
On Collateral, exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. And they, you know, but I'm sure it was a lot different situation than we had, but luckily I had this DP that I had worked with on, like, a lot of commercials and videos and stuff like that, and we had a dialogue already, and we knew each other, and there was also a trust there, and he'd worked on some HD movies before, so...
20 days, that means what? How much of that was in Paris? How
5 from Paris and 15 in New York.
And no rehearsal time?
No rehearsal.
You must have, like, intensely blocked it out, supported it, so that you knew exactly how... No,
I'm not really big story. I mean, maybe storyboards would be great, but I just didn't really have time to do any storyboards.
Everybody ideally want to have a little bit of time just to redo it? We could get it better if we could just go back and try it one more time, you know.
We just weren't in that mentality, you know. It was like we didn't have the luxury of even thinking that was going to happen, so... You know, everyone's like, well, you shoot on digital and you can shoot it over and over and over again. I'm like, well, we couldn't because we had to get to the next location, which had to be next door because we couldn't afford the time to move the truck to do the thing. So it was like, you know, this constant running. And so everybody just did the best they could.
So I guess, not to get too technical on this, but with the Viper, that means because it's so light sensitive, and you didn't have to light it as carefully.
We did a lot of you have to light it very carefully. We did a lot of camera tests before of stuff, because just if you don't set it right, it's just very green and magenta. That's like the primary color. But luckily, I had a great DP who knew what he was doing. I was very...
3 minutes?
What?
3 minutes?
Okay.
I was just really lucky. I mean, I was lucky on a lot of levels, and I learned a lot of things. It's like going to film school, you know, make a film and, you know, life school.
Boy. Do you know how many, I mean, this is something, do you and Justin Theroux have did you know him before?
I didn't. Parker said, do you want me to call Justin, see if he wants to be in the movie? I was like, yeah, I love Justin. We met, you know, at this park on 8th Avenue, and we had his dogs, and we just sat there, and he was editing his own film that he had just made, and he had this mohawk, and he's like, I gave myself a mohawk, so I couldn't work right now. I'm like, I can make that work. I can totally make that work. And, you know, and he's one of my great friends now, but, you know, but and especially because he just made a film, he was so sympathetic to what I was going through. That he came in and he came prepared and he brought a bunch of clothes. He's like, what about this? What about this? This is all cleared. And I'm like, I love you. You know? So, and after Sundance, whatever, we could talk to each other about the mutual experience of making a movie and being with each other.
How soon before the Sundance screen had you finished it?
2 days.
Really? Okay. So you really hadn't had any chance to show it to a group of any that was...
No. In fact, the day before we left, I watched it projected for the first time.
Have you refined it in any way? Has it changed?
No. I mean, it's transferred to film. It looks nice.
Yeah.
This has a nice, a little bit softer quality to it. It's kind of nice. But no, it is what it is, you know. And I think that's kind of, I think that ends up being my style anyway. Like, I'm kind of a guerrilla filmmaker. Like, let's go and just shoot it. Like, not everything has to be perfect because life isn't perfect. And, you know, you could be all set up to do something and something horrible would happen and you would just be as screwed as you would if you didn't have the time or the money. So it was just really important to get the movie made, you know. But when I got into the edit room and I realized I had all these incredible performances, I knew that it was going to be fun. I mean, we had some technical troubles and, you know, I had to take, you know, never again is anybody smoking in my movie because of this arm thing with the cigarette and the arm. I was like, well, we're going to have to put a different arm on there or some things like that. But, and I had a great editor who knew how to do that. So, you know, my team was really phenomenal.
Yeah.
It's an army, you know?
Yeah. What, was the crew somewhat smaller, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, it seemed even too big for... And we had, like, 12 people in Paris, and that was great, you know? It's like, French people are like, you know, no one's going to say, like, can you pick up? They're just like, they pick it up, they move. But they didn't realize how the kind of hours we were going to work. At the end of 8 hours, they were like, I'm like, oh, we have about 8 more hours today. They were like, what? So.
Now, you and your fiancé met after the film was shot, you said?
No, we met before the film was shot. And he did all my music for the movie.
Okay.
And just, you know. Convenient to keep it in the family, but I think, you know, even though I wrote the script before, it was nice to have kind of someone there to be the influence of, like, am I saying this the right way, or is this the right kind of cadence for whatever I'm doing, and you know, he's a musician, so we're both artists, but we don't do what the other one does, so we can understand the whole idea and support the whole idea, but it's not like a competition, you know.
Right. How many people have asked you about Paris Hilton getting out after 3 days?
Nobody, but I was thinking, I'll always remember this day. I know, I try to stay out of that shit. I was like, oh, I'm going to L.A. and Lindsay's in rehab and Paris is in jail. This is going to be great.
Yeah.
I could actually go out somewhere. But.
This thing that I wrote about, this is the big moment where she had a chance to show some metal. You know, there would be something else. She would show that. She would do the analogy I had was that she would be Robert Mitchum when he went to jail for the pot bust. And,
man, you know, do the right thing.
And just, you know, kind of just do the time and don't sweat it. And she would have been, like, so much taller. And she did exactly the wrong thing.
She did, but it's, you know, it's not fucking front page news. I'm sorry. That shit is not front page news. There's other things. You know, I like the gossips as much as everybody else in the weird way or whatever. But at the same time, it's like, I call it crack. Like, it's making me sick as I'm reading it. Mm-hmm. And it's not just those, you know, those girls don't just go out and do that and suddenly it happens. There's people facilitating that stuff, you know. Mm-hmm. And they're all messes. And, you know, I feel bad for those girls. But at the same time, I was thinking the other day, like, maybe all these girls getting in trouble is going to change things a little bit. And maybe the quality of life will be better for them, better for us. And we don't have to, I don't have to know all those things about people and, or the lies or whatever it is. I don't know. It just makes me sad. And for all the people, you know, if you don't, there's a bunch of huge movie stars and rock stars that never get their name in those things because they don't want that. Mm-hmm. So I just feel like, you know, I was walking down the street with Sofia Coppola the other day in New York, and when she was with her kid, her baby, and her boyfriend, and we were bar PD, and we started to walk on Bleecker Street, and mm-hmm. I was like, oh, look, there's paparazzi, and one peeked behind the truck, and then I looked over there, and there was one, and 15 paparazzi followed us on Bleecker Street to get the same photo for 3 hours, and it was so violating and vile and disgusting, and I was like, what is going on here? What, I mean, the baby bonnet thing was down. I mean, they weren't getting a picture of the kid, and it was just so harassing. And I picked up my cell phone to try to take a picture of them, and they scrammed. And I thought, you can't have the camera turned on you, but you don't mind violating somebody else's life.
Yeah.
Like, you know, there should be, like, stalker rules or something. Like, if you go out to a public place and there's a red carpet or there's a party or something, then fine, but... like, to peek in people's lives like that is just kind of, it's just so creepy. That's why France is really nice. It's like, you don't really have any of that going on.
Yeah, yeah.
Forget about all of it. You can concentrate on Sarkozy or whatever. Sarko.
What's your, do you have any films that kind of operate in this vein that you would, that you admire particularly? Films of a, that are relationship films that are, you know, that do it in a more peculiar and interesting and emotionally naked way that we see in your film. I mean, are there any that you have in your mind as...
Well, like, I really like Nicole Holofcener's work, Lovely and Amazing, and Walking and Talking, and Friends with Money, and all that stuff. And I appreciated her sensibility of trying to be more human about that stuff. Right. I like smaller films, and it doesn't have to be a woman that directs them. I just appreciate, you know, I'm not a big blockbuster go-seer, you know, cable or something, but probably not still, you know. I'm a big reader. I like to read.
It was very, very nice.
Great to meet you. Great to meet you.
Again,
I'm so glad you liked it. I'm saying I love when men like this movie.
Yeah.
Makes me happy.
Girls have to. Do you think I could drop by just during the Q&A? I mean, I don't have time to come to the screening, and I didn't even know about it. But may I? Is there some way I could drop by?
I'm sure that's fine. Let me call Brooke, but I'm sure that's
fine. It should be no sweat.
Yeah, we'll just put you on the list.
And it's 7:30-ish? Is that when it's supposed to start?
The movie's 94 minutes long, so.
You want to see the movie as well?
I don't know if I can do that. We have to go out and
You don't have to see the movie.
I know, I actually would love to see it, because it's been, you know, it's been five months. I'd just like to...
Go see it in the theater.
The screening starts at 7:30, and, you know, it's 90 minutes, so the Q&A should start at 9:10.
Yeah.
Don't you love that it's 90 minutes long?
I know, it's the best.
It is, except for when you want to go to dinner in the middle of the thing.
So if I wasn't aware of it, I mean, I could have gone with it longer, frankly. I mean, I thought it was...
Yeah.
I just liked what you were doing with it, and I didn't mind. I was totally open for it.
I hate when movies end like 10 times. So you're like, great, and then you're like, oh, there's another half hour of this thing? Jesus.
Yeah.
There's nowhere left to go.
Okay.
Anyway. All right, great. We'll see you later then.
Yes, I hope so, yes.
Yeah.